Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Everick from Harlem, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC Radio.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
I'm smart, and I want respect.
Damn it, you have to be smarter than that.
Pretty smart, huh?
Pretty smart.
Today, we continue our occasional series on how to be smarter. We've been asking listeners and guests what their musical blind spots are, and we got a doozy of a question last week from Christopher Barnes, the lead singer from the Massachusetts-based band Gem Club. Take a listen.
I want to know more about New Age music.
Why?
I want to know more about...
Why?
Okay, because I'm totally... Someone was sending me all of these articles about Enya and her recording techniques, right?
Right.
And I think as an artist, part of the production is totally fascinating and the talent is totally fascinating. But then you think about it like, well, it's New Age. And that's what I heard when I was growing up. And I'm like, is New Age a legitimate... I mean, I know it's a legitimate genre, but like... Enya is the first thing that I think of when I think of New Age. So if someone that is out there that has like really cool New Age records, which I'm sure they totally exist, I would just email us.
All right, Christopher. Now, if you're listening, we can do one better than emailing you some record titles, because joining me here in the studio is Mike Rubin, a regular contributor to the New York Times, who has covered the evolution of New Age music and some of its contemporary forms. Mike, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
You heard Christopher from Gem Club saying, you know, is it a legit? I know it's a legitimate genre, but he seems sort of unsure.
The origin of it actually was because it was. It was a grab bag term. Late 70s, early 80s, it was instrumental records that didn't really correspond to jazz, country music, or rock and roll.
So it was a kind of a catch-all term.
Yeah. And at the time, it you could find, you know, if you went to a store, you could find everything from some sort of harp record to Steve Reich, all thrown in there in the New Age bin.
And Christopher mentions Enya, the Irish singer, and she never intended to make New Age music, but if you looked in the New Age music bins, this is what you'd find. Enya had a huge hit with Orinoco Flow, but that was 1988, Mike. By that point, New Age has been around for a while, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of grows out of what? The electronic music movement?
It's a real confluence of things. The musicians themselves were coming out of electronic music. A lot of them were influenced by progressive rock, by the German Kosmische music.
So groups like Popol Vuh and Tangerine Dream,
exactly.
Klaus Schulze.
But also, at the same time, there was very much a post-hippie awakening and consciousness that was also brought in by some of the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, in the early 80s, there were maybe 3,000 New Age bookstores throughout the country. And so that became a way to distribute these records. There's a box set that came out late last year called I Am the Center, which chronicles the history of New Age music and really defines it as being a self-released music.
The original indie music, in a sense.
The original indie music, huh. Before punk rock, in fact.
So let me ask you, you mentioned early 80s. Yes, there were all these New Age bookstores. It was great to have the New Age label affixed to your little cassette because it could get in the bookstores and maybe be sold. Why are we still talking about it in 2014? Why did you earlier this year write this big article in the New York Times about it? Why is New Age suddenly back in the air and in our conversations again?
I think there's a lot of younger musicians that are influenced by analog synthesizer sounds, and they have gravitated to explore some of the early pioneers of the music.
All right, so if we want to be smarter now about New Age music, give us some names. I mean, let's start with that box set that you mentioned.
You know, a track that's on there it's quite an interesting story behind it. There's a track by Laraji, who is locally based here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was raised in Philadelphia, a trained musician, at a certain point in the 70s, he had while meditating, he had a deep religious hearing experience where he heard this layers of brass instruments and a gorgeous melodic symphony in his head, and he swapped his guitar for a zither at a Queens pawn shop and began to play in Washington Square Park. And at one point, I think it was 1979, he was playing, his legs were crossed, he was meditating and playing, and when he opened his eyes, in his hat, his guitar case, there was a card from Brian Eno inviting him to come and meet him, and they ended up recording Day of Radiance, one of the early ambient Eno records.
But Laraji has had, a long career in New Age music. That one kind of pinnacle with Brian Eno is a terrific record. But you wanted to hear something from Unicorns in Paradise. This is a 1981 record by him.
Yes.
And the title here, Unicorns in Paradise, we're getting into like some serious New Age imagery, aren't we?
Yeah.
Laraji with Unicorns in Paradise from 1981. So this is after he did his best-known record, the one with Brian Eno. We're speaking with Mike Rubin, who wrote The New Age, The Next Generation for the New York Times earlier this year. And as part of our occasional series, How to Be Smarter, we're answering a question from Christopher Barnes from the Massachusetts band Gem Club, who wanted to know how he could be smarter about New Age music. A style of music, and it was more than music, Mike. I mean, we alluded to the imagery, the unicorns and the paradise. One of the things that, was sort of could be enticing to some and off-putting to others was the idea of this cosmic consciousness, the healing music thing. Music, not
right.
as music, but as something that, like an oral bubble bath or something.
Right. It definitely, I think, it came with an entire... A lot of baggage. One of the things that happened is that these younger musicians have sort of looked at the stuff without the blinders, as it were.
Well, in your article for The Times, you write about this compilation, and the guy who put it together is like 37 or 38. So at the heyday of the New Age music movement, this guy would have been a kid.
Yeah.
It's called I Am the Center, Private Issue New Age Music in America, 1950 to 1990. And let's hear something from this track. Who is J.D. or Daniel Emmanuel?
He's a Texas-based early synthesizer adapter.
It has that kind of vaguely exotic Eastern flavor to it,
yeah.
which a lot of this music has, and it's called Arabian Fantasy. Do you think that this guy just like set up his synthesizer and plugged it into a cassette deck and sort of improvised it straight to tape?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite possible that was the case. I don't know enough about his particular method. I ended up speaking to him for my story, but
this was a common way of making this sort of thing.
Yeah, and there was a lot of some of it was intended to be a meditational accompaniment, and some of it was intended to be the search for peace and contentment.
And at some point, these New Age musicians are therefore trying to serve two masters. They're trying to make music, but they're also trying to do something with it, you know? And you could say the same thing about protest singers in the 60s and stuff. It's always difficult when the music has an ulterior purpose for it to be great music. So
I might argue with that. I mean, I think that I'm certainly a fan of rock and roll and electronic dance music, and that has the purpose of making someone, you know, move their body in a certain way. This music is... Some of it is directed for people to sort of clear their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas McGowan actually said something really interesting to
me. He's the guy who put this compilation together.
Yeah, and he said that getting away from the noise of society is such a central idea, and that space is silence and nothingness and emptiness, he said to me. Once you wrap your head around nothingness as being a virtue, it becomes so much easier to appreciate the music on its own terms.
Mm-hmm. That sounds... like something John Cage might have said.
Absolutely.
So we're speaking with Mike Rubin, who's written this article called For New Age, The Next Generation. Wrote it earlier this year for the New York Times, part of our series How to Be Smarter, and we're talking about the New Age music movement, which had its kind of height in the late 70s, early 80s. And one of the sort of, well, there were a number of like big names associated with it. You had people like Vangelis, who predate New Age music but sort of got sucked into it. Then you had people like Stephen Halpern, Yanni came later. Tell us about Yassos, because he was another of the big names in the field.
Yeah, Yassos was San Diego-based, I think. Again, synthesizer and flute composer or improviser, as it were. He comes along right in sort of the very beginning. I think his 1975 album, Interdimensional Music, is a... ends up being a sort of keystone of what becomes New Age music.
And a keystone both in the sound and in the way people reacted to it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people accused this music of being just wallpaper, oral wallpaper, in the same way that many people say current dance music, electronic dance music, is just a different kind of sonic wallpaper. Here is a piece by Yassos called Formentera Sunset Clouds. Formentera Sunset Clouds by the artist known as Yassos, I-A-S-O-S, who, Mike, was there at the birth, so to speak, of the New Age movement.
Yeah.
And is still going strong?
Still going strong. In fact, he was he's a big influence on some of the younger musicians that I spoke to for the piece.
All right. Now, that to me was the big surprise. Having lived through the 80s and my other show here, New Sounds, was also kind of painted with the New Age brush in the 80s because I was really interested in people like Brian Eno and Laraji and even someone like Terry Riley with his very Eastern-oriented keyboard improvisations. Somehow all of that stuff, you know, got subsumed into the New Age thing, whether anybody wanted it or not. So the idea that there are now artists out there who are embracing the term is a curious one to me. Tell us a little bit about, for example, Mark McGuire.
Well, Mark McGuire is someone who actually, I guess, would embrace the term. I mean, he comes from the punk rock scenes in Cleveland. He was been in a very influential band called Emeralds. It was an analog synthesizer trio, and they released scores of homemade cassettes and CDRs, and eventually a number of sort of more traditionally distributed albums. But all along, they were one of the first of these sort of underground electronic bands to openly acknowledge the influence of people like Yasos and Laraji and these early synthesized uses of the synthesizer.
In Search of the Miraculous is from Mark McGuire and an album called Along the Way. Guitarist Mark McGuire from his album Along the Way and a piece called In Search of the Miraculous. There are lots of moments, Mike Rubin, on this record that I'm not sure Yasos or Laraji or any of those guys would point to and say, oh yeah, that's New Age music. But for Mark McGuire, that is an important part of his musical DNA.
Yeah, and again, it's really, a lot of these younger artists are really sort of looking at this and not breaking things down into specific genre titles. But Mark McGuire, there's a video on YouTube of him jamming with Yasos at the Body Actualize Center, this yoga studio that's out in Bushwick, where I actually saw him perform. But there's a clip of the two of them jamming, Mark on guitar and Yasos on treated flute. And, you know, he's open to it.
Listeners, what's your history with New Age music? What do you think? Is it time come round again? Were you around for the first flowering of New Age music in the 80s? You can leave us a comment at soundcheck.org or a voicemail at 866-939-1612. Mike Rubin's article for the New York Times earlier this year is called For New Age, The Next Generation. Mark McGuire is certainly a part of that next generation, but there are others who might not be so embracing of the term, but who you think, you know, owe a debt to this movement.
Well, I don't know if it's so much owe a debt, but it's easy to group them under, again, what people think of as being that. I think the artist Juliana Barwick is certainly, she would resist being, described as New Age. Mm-hmm. But pejoratively, people have called her the Indiana. It's sort of the gauzy textures and
multiple layers of voice.
Yeah. A sort of free-floating, almost amniotic kind of state. Most of what really defines it and stuff, along with the sort of textures, and is the fact that there's really not a beat that's driving.
So Juliana Barwick, New York-based vocalist, does a lot of live looping and stuff. So it's happening all over again, that the term New Age is beginning to just kind of magnetically pull in all these disparate forms of music that we don't know what else to call.
Yeah, I mean, I for lack of a better word, I mean, I just wrote about recently the artist Craig Leon for The Times, and there's a reissue of the two early 80s synthesizer records he made, Nomos and Visiting. And those were, you know, while he was made as fame as the producer of the first Ramones and Suicide albums, those records are instrumental synthesizer recordings inspired by the art of the Dogon people of Mali, who were inspired by their belief in an extraterrestrial contact. And those were grouped under New Age records. And so, you know, for lack of a better term, that was what they were
called.
I
remember those Craig Leon records. They were actually pretty damn good, especially Visiting. So subsequently, they were like retroactively pulled in. You're a new age too.
Yeah, another. There's other artists. I mean, there's a number of Grey Ghost is an artist. I think that openly probably refers to themselves or as new age. There's a very interesting band that's playing out of Chicago called Bitchin' Bajas, which is a side project of a more of a sort of psychedelic rock band called Cave. But they again work from the German Kosmische sort of playbook, and they've got they have a new album that's actually coming out at the end of August. That's half of the album. I believe it's a double album, and half the album is very Kosmische and sort of driving, and half of it is very sort of blissful, contemplative synthesizer soundscapes.
There's a whole new generation, as Mike Rubin recounts in his article for The Times. The article is called For New Age, The Next Generation. And Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.